south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Do you remember on the last show when I was talking about how Latin Americans living here in Latin America, not Latin Americans living in the States, there's a big difference. When we were talking about how Latin Americans down here view the fact there are so many crazy mass killings up in the States, I've spoken to a number of middle-class Latinos who would love to move to the States, and they're getting pretty worried about that. And of course, we mentioned a lot of that stuff's happening in Brazil right now, too, but not with guns, with knives and hatchets and stuff. But that kind of info just never leaks up to the first world, it seems. Anyway, right after I recorded that show, this article popped up on that same theme. That these days, because of all those mass killings and all the press they get in the States, one-third of Americans say they avoid crowded venues like music festivals as well as outdoor events and clubs. Now, why would that be? Well, of course, to avoid the possibility of being caught up themselves in a mass shooting. In other words, about a third of Americans feel they're actually at risk. By the way, this poll was done by the Kaiser Family Foundation. You know, Kaiser's a huge healthcare organization. They released that poll a couple of days ago on Tuesday. Now, in response to another question asked by that poll, they found out about 84% of American respondents said they took at least one precaution in the last month to avoid that kind of mass violence. In other words, Americans are changing their habits when out in public based on their fear of being a victim. Man, I'll tell you, who wants to live like that? They also discovered about 30% of the people who took the poll said they bought a gun recently to protect themselves, and about 23%, a quarter of them, said they now avoid using public transportation. In addition, 1 in 5, 20% said they have changed or are changing the schools their kids attend. In other words, all this mass shooting stuff is impacting the decisions of average Americans. Americans are becoming more and more paranoid. However, when you decide to pick this poll apart, what you discover is that Americans are turning into wimpy little limp-wristed cowards, afraid of anything and everything they read in the mass media. Wait a minute. How can you say that, Johnny? How can you be so cruel, so heartless, so cold? Don't Americans have a right to protect themselves and avoid those kind of dangers at all costs? Well, the thing is, to me, as a guy who's taken many math classes in my life, including a couple of undergraduate and graduate classes in statistics, it just goes to show that the vast number of Americans don't know the first thing about math, probabilities, or statistics. Now, you might be thinking, well, people are getting murdered. Every week or so, there's a report in the news there have been some crazy-ass person blowing people away at a school or a picnic. Therefore, it's eminently logical that you avoid those places at all costs, right? Well, here's what 99% of the sweaty masses never consider. Facts they don't even care to know, because they don't fit into that nice little narrow vision of what the mass media shit shovelers are dishing out on a daily basis. So to get down to it and strip away the bullshit, we need a little clarity here. Like, for example, this chart I'm looking at right now, it's a chart of 41 years of mass shootings in the U.S. It's a database of mass shootings compiled by that wokester rag, Mother Jones, but, you know, those are stats, irrefutable facts, going back from 1982 to present. Let me start out by laying out some numbers for you. Let's pick the last 7 years. We're talking about mass killings in the U.S., of course. In 2016, there were 71 people killed. 2017, 117 people killed. 2018, 80 people dead. 2019, 74 dead. 2020, a light year for nutcases, only 9 people killed. 2021, 30 people killed. 2022, a banner year, a crazy-ass year. 200 people killed. But here's what you didn't know. I'm selecting 2022 because it was a banner year. An extreme year for mass killings. So as to give you and present a worst-case example. Did you know that 21,700 people died by suicide? 21,700 in 2022. And 95% of them were on some kind of psychotropic medicine You know, mood elevators, antidepressants, prescribed by a doctor. By the way, did you know that in 2022, the leading cause of deaths for adult Americans was fentanyl? With 80,000 people dead in 2022? That means for 2022 anyway, it was 400 times more probable the average American died from a fentanyl overdose than from a mass shooting. That's not a 400% greater chance of dying from fentanyl. That's a 40,000% greater chance of death. Maybe that's why the average American doesn't get it. They hate math and they don't want to know the numbers. Look, how many times have you been to a get-together at a party, out at a date, whatever? The bill comes and someone says, here, you figure it out. I hate math. I'm bad at it. By the way, did you know that in 2022, 3,000 Americans died from falling down stairs, regular old stairs? That means in 2022 anyway. Again, I repeat, I'm picking 2022 because so far it's got the highest mass murder rate. Anyway, you have a 15 times greater chance of falling down the stairs and dying than being bumped off in a mass murder. So that logically means you should be 15 times more afraid to live in a two-story house than attend a public get-together. Oh, and did you know in 2022, 800 Americans drowned in a swimming pool? That means statistically you should be four times more scared getting into a pool than being out in public and risking being a victim of a mass shooting. Oh, and about 800 people died in 2022 falling off a ladder. So, by all means, head to your garage right now and throw that ladder in the dumpster. Because statistically, you've got a four times greater chance of dying falling off that thing than you do being a victim of a mass shooting. By the way, did you know in 2022, 5,314,000 people went to the emergency room because they had been bitten by a dog? And 62 of those people died. So what does that mean? Well, obviously, dogs should be outlawed. Dogs should be banned. But that's not going to happen, right? Because people love their dogs. They'll be grandfathered in if there's a class action lawsuit, if it ever comes to that, and it might. But who knows? Hey, in these days of extreme wokeism, anything can happen. Then there's that truly odd statistic, the fact that 130 people a year die by coconut. A bonk on the head, a direct hit with one of those things will kill you. Now, of course, as the U.S. is concerned, that means people only in the far southern states like Florida, Louisiana, California, they're the only ones that really need to consider wearing crash helmets or getting catastrophic coconut insurance. By the way, how many of you guys and gals refuse to swim in the ocean because of possible shark bite? Well, here's the facts. In what's been called an unusually deadly year for shark attacks, 10 people around the world were killed in 2022, and 3 in U.S. waters. Are you getting this? 3 shark deaths last year in U.S. waters. Yet since the movie Jaws, the entire world has been neurotically and obsessively tuned in to those kinds of extremely rare and unusual events. Since Jaws, there have probably been 50 successively bad shark movies. Hey, how about this? How about a class action suit against Steven Spielberg? He started this whole thing, right? He's got deep pockets. What he did was the equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater. Now get this. It says, according to the Marine Mammal Center in Sausalito, California, if you're a casual swimmer, the odds of being killed by a shark in your entire lifetime is about 3.7 million to 1. And if you don't swim in the ocean at all, your odds of being killed by a shark are billions and billions to 1. Though, oddly enough, the odds aren't zero, you know. There's always a chance during a hurricane, flood, or tornado, a shark could fly through the air with the greatest of ease and take a chunk out of you. All things considered, you have a much better chance of being bumped off by a coconut. But you knew that already, right? So do occasionally look up. So then considering all that, how fearful should Americans really be about personally being on the wrong end of the gun in a mass shooting? Well, let's put it this way. According to a recent article in Healthline magazine, which states statistics from the National Safety Council, your lifetime risk now, of dying in a mass shooting is about the same chance of dying from a dog attack or legal state-sanctioned execution. You know, getting sentenced to death by lethal injection or the electric chair. About the same odds as being a single winner in a state Powerball jackpot. So, as you probably realize now, after laying out those stupid statistics at the beginning of this rant, that a third of Americans are reporting that they're changing their outdoor habits so as to avoid being caught up in a mass shooting. Come on, is there anything more ridiculous than that? Well, that just proves that Americans are, at least a large proportion of Americans, prefer the lamestream media's version of facts over scientific facts. Just like that whole COVIDiot story. Both the sweaty masses and the limousine liberals were all in. Limousine liberal, man, that's a blast from the past, huh? The shoe still fits. Oh, and just a little postscript to this rant. It's always good to read polls that show how illogical and irrational your average woke idiot is. I bet 99.9% are triple vaxxed, too. Now, when I mentioned that the title of the article that we've been talking about is "One-Third of Americans Say They Avoid Crowded Venues Like Music, Festivals, and Clubs to Avoid Mass Shootings." Now, there's something that makes that claim, that headline, even more ridiculous. Funny how no one mentions the risk you take when you drive to any event at all. Americans are more likely to be killed or injured while driving to and from a festival or event. That's statistically much more dangerous than anything that can happen to you at the event itself. Driving a car is far more dangerous, by tens of thousands of percentage points, too. So, all this proves is how gullible people are and how susceptible to mass media propaganda and bullshit. They fall for it every time. In the last 10 or 20 years, Americans have been so dumbed down. Half of all Americans don't even know how many planets there are in the solar system. Less than 20% can name the world's oceans and continents. And get this, 80% of Americans believe boiling radioactive water makes it safe to drink. Wait a minute. Isn't it? As for me, I was never into going to big outdoor events at all. Not because of lunatic shooters, but because of the loud, drunken a-holes making fools of themselves, ruining the sound and the view. Oh, and one more thing. That ever-present chance of Montezuma's revenge if you happen to sneak a bite from one of those on-site kiosks. Oh, and let's not forget those wonderful porta-potty experiences and that splashback phenomena. Man, I'll tell you, those things get my vote for one of the worst inventions of the past 100 years. How about you? Oh, and just one more thing. There has to be a movement to outlaw bees. After all, about 60 people a year die from bee stings stateside. You know, for many years, up till maybe the last 2 years, bee stings killed more people each year than mass shooters. So bees, sharks, coconuts, they're the real threats to humanity. Talk about threats to the human race. We haven't even mentioned those toxic kid-killing peanuts yet. But we'll save the peanut holocaust for another show. In the meantime, as long as McDonald's and Pizza Hut keep delivering, I think I'll lock myself in the house forever. After all, our marvelous governments gave us the example when they gave us those wonderful lockdowns. We've had plenty of practice. We're used to it. You can be sure lockdowns are coming back to your neighborhood real soon. Meanwhile, on a related subject, Northwestern University in Chicago released a study this week reporting that American IQ test scores have rapidly dropped in the last few years. Of course, IQ tests are a white supremacist construct, which makes you wonder why this news didn't get scrubbed from the internet. Just slipped through, I guess, though maybe heads will roll. Anyway, in brief, this article says, leading up to the 1990s, IQ scores in the United States were consistently going up, except in the last few years, things have flipped. It says scores in verbal reasoning, matrix reasoning, language, letters, numbers, and math have all declined. But interestingly, in one area, IQ scores went up, in spatial 3D visual acuity, a direct effect, researchers say, of the accelerated use of video games. So then how can the unprecedented drop in IQ be explained? Well, some hypotheses have been put forward to try to explain what they call the reverse Flynn effect. You may have heard of the Flynn effect. In 1984, researcher James Flynn noticed that intelligence test scores always steadily increased from way back in the 1930s. In other words, since the 1930s, the whole American society has been getting smarter year over year. That's why the big drop in IQ in the last few years has surprised so many cognitive scientists. Funny, too, how that drop in IQ coincides directly with the advent of the iPhone. Though scientists speculate it's not that simple. There must be other reasons for the decline. Some hypotheses being falling nutritional standards, worsening of the school system, excessive social media, increased air pollution, glyphosate and other toxic chemicals permeating the environment, constant bombardment with electromagnetic waves from TVs, computers, cell towers, smart devices, etc. And consider this. How about the fact that the wokesters have their own version of science? that 1 and 1 doesn't equal 2 anymore. It equals 3 if they want it to be, or 4, or 5. Wouldn't that be a little confusing whilst taking an IQ test? Or any test, for that matter? After all, math is a white patriarch's construct. These days, if you do a traditional math problem and get the answer wrong, according to standard math that's been around a couple thousand years now, if you disagree with your teacher and happen to think your answer is right, well, you get the last word. Because in a woke world, feelings trump logic and science. After all, it's all about what you feel the answer should be. In any event, falling IQs are yet another mystery for scientists to solve, though wokesters certainly won't like it when they hear the facts. Which is probably why this article won't get any traction, because once again, measuring IQ is a racist white man's construct. All right, moving on to more things specifically Latin American. Here's a question. Have you ever heard of the Big Mac Index? Not that I eat those things. I haven't had one for at least 35 years. How about that? Anyway, there's a thing called the Big Mac Index published by The Economist magazine. It turns out it's a quick and dirty way of measuring the cost of living index for whatever market or country you want to look at. Here's the thing. When McDonald's first started expanding internationally, they'd set up their first store, whether it be Italy, France, England, Russia, whatever. They'd peg all their food, including the Big Mac, to the local dollar funny money currency equivalent. For example, let's take Honduras. Their local funny money is the lempira, about 20 lempira to the dollar. So if a Big Mac was $3, it would be 60 lempira. That's how they'd set their prices with the very first McDonald's that landed in that country. Now remember, in most countries around the world, including Latin American countries, McDonald's landed a long time ago. For example, in Honduras, the first one landed in the capital, Tegucigalpa, in 1995. And at that time, that moment, they pegged the Big Mac and all the other food to McDonald's USA prices. However, as months and years went on, the prices were readjusted in local funny money terms to reflect the purchasing power of the average or above average, in this case, Honduran. It reverted to a more reasonable and affordable price for the locals, allowing the average guy to more affordably poison himself. So, as it turns out, for a McDonald's in whatever country, the difference in the cost of a Big Mac expressed in U.S. dollars versus the cost of a Big Mac up in the States pretty much reflects the difference in the purchasing power of each local currency, and thus has become a pretty good approximation for that country's cost of living compared to the U.S. In other words, it's a quick and dirty way to find out, if you're a tourist, for example, how far your dollar is going to go in that country. For example, I have a chart in front of me right now that lists the price of a Big Mac in all the countries in the world that have McDonald's. In fact, most of the countries of the world have McDonald's, so this is a pretty cool chart. If you want it, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. All right, let's take an example. This chart lists about 100 countries with McDonald's in them. So then, according to the Big Mac Index, what do you think is the country with the lowest cost of living? In other words, the country with the cheapest Big Mac in dollar terms. Why, it's Venezuela. No surprise there, because you see, in the U.S., the average Big Mac costs $5.15. In Venezuela, it's $1.76. So dividing those two numbers out, Venezuela is about 66 or two-thirds less expensive than the U.S. All right, let's take a few more. How about Mexico? Cost of a Big Mac in U.S. dollars, $3.43. And again, a Big Mac is $5.15 in the U.S. That means, dividing those numbers out, Mexico is about 33% or a third cheaper, talking about general cost of living, than the U.S. Now, of course, we're talking generally here, off the Gringo tourist trail, that is, because when you're on the trail, you're paying pretty much first world prices all the way. Not for a Big Mac, though. As mentioned before, throughout other countries, the price of McDonald's is kind of standardized. That is, averaged out between the regular, normal people. The higher cost of living on the tourist trail is not factored in. When it comes to McDonald's and other first world franchises, the tourist trail price in a country is the same as off the tourist trail. The only place that doesn't hold true is at international airports, where things can be three times as expensive, even in a first world franchise. In other words, most of the McDonald's products, including Big Macs, are bought by the common working class folks, not people on the tourist trail. All right, let's take Guatemala. Cost of a Big Mac, around $3.36, which, once again, like Mexico, reflects a cost of living in general about a third less than the U.S. And now, as we get to a country like Brazil or Argentina, the cost of a Big Mac's coming in at a price much closer to the pricing in the U.S. For example, in Brazil, $4.25 as compared to $5.15 in the U.S., which means the average cost of living in Brazil is about 15% cheaper than the U.S. And in Argentina, where the cost of a Big Mac is about $4.57 versus $5.15 in the U.S., that means living in Argentina, on average, is only about 10% less expensive than living in the States. Again, we're talking about non-tourist trail areas. Now, here's something interesting. There are countries where a Big Mac's more expensive than in the U.S. That means a higher cost of living. It's no surprise that Big Mac in Switzerland costs more than in the States, $6.71. That means if you live in Switzerland, your average cost of living will be a third more than the U.S. Same thing with Norway. We're a Big Mac $6.26. That means if you live there, it'll be about 20% more than living in the U.S. Here's a surprise. A Latin American country called Uruguay. We know it well, right? Cost of a Big Mac, $6.08. That's 18% higher than the U.S. What's that mean? If you live in Uruguay, on average, it'll cost you 18% more than living in the United States. Why is that? Well, because as far as any manufactured product, Uruguay doesn't make anything. They import everything. That means the government takes a big import tax bite out of everything that comes in. Anyway, the Big Mac Index is kind of a quick and dirty way to find out what costs of living are in various countries. If you want a link to this article and list, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. All right, in another related article, I'm looking at a list right now, it just came out, of the 25 countries in the world with the highest rates of inflation. No surprise, Venezuela's number one with 440% this year. Oddly enough, almost every other country on this list is in Africa. Though there are a few more Latin American countries on that list. Places I'd never recommend for a Plan B destination, at least not now. Number four on that list, by the way, is Argentina, with an average annualized inflation rate of 98.8%, making it an absolute nightmare for savers. That means you get paid, you get your salary or whatever, you go out and spend it right away, because as the days tick on, it's worth noticeably less and less. So nobody saves, and you can't switch it to another currency. Well, you can, but they only allow you, for example, to switch over $200 US a month. But I can tell you, in a couple of years, Argentina is going to be a great place to invest in real estate after they have that eventual complete socioeconomic and political blowout that they so richly deserve after so many decades of terrible government policies and horrendous mismanagement. Anyway, number seven on that list of the countries with the highest inflation rate is Suriname. That's the Republic of Suriname in South America. It was a British colony that broke away, got its freedom in 1975. Also, one of the smallest countries in the world in terms of population and GDP. Of course, that country is politically and socially out of control, too, with an inflation rate of 55.5% over the last year. It is technically a Latin American country, but I'd never recommend it for a Plan B myself. Then, we've got Haiti, sort of a Latin American country. I mean, it's connected to the Dominican Republic on the island of Hispaniola, right? It's got a year-over-year inflation rate of 48.3%. And man, it's like the last place you'd want to have a Plan B. It's a hellhole. Number 13 on that list is another Latin country, Cuba. Enough's been said about that country. They've got an inflation rate annualized of 42%. All right, yanking the wheel here. You might remember a few shows ago we were talking about buying and driving cars here in Latin America. You're probably going to do that, you know. Chances are when you land down here, if you don't buy a car, you'll find soon enough that you'll want to get one. Now, of course, people ask me all the time, Johnny, what kind of insurance should I get for my car? I always say, get the minimum possible. The basic third-party coverage mandated by law probably costs you $200 a year. But, of course, Americans and Canadians are used to buying full coverage, right? Well, you can get that down here, too, and it's pretty cheap. Run you probably $400 or $500 a year, even for a really nice car, something worth maybe $30,000. But the truth is, it's not necessary because labor is so damn cheap down here. For example, not so long ago, I had the whole side of my car sideswiped. A big old crease from the front bumper through the two doors on through the back bumper. But luckily, none of the lights or halogen coverings were broken. It was just a straight bodywork job, and it cost me around $600. That's like a payment for a year of full coverage insurance, right? That's why I always say, too, you should buy a pretty common make, like a Volkswagen, Honda, Toyota, Kia, Hyundai, etc., because they've got all the parts down here. Original parts and the cheap Chinese knockoffs, too. So again, I say skip the full coverage. Unless you're a moneybags type and don't need to watch your nickels and dimes, then go ahead and get it. And if you're really loaded and don't care about money, you can go live in Monaco, too. For that matter, Paris, Hong Kong, any expensive, high cost of living place you want to live. But I guess probably 99% of the people who listen to this show, you realize that having a low cost of living here in Latin America is a great reason to move on down here. But back to this full coverage insurance thing. You know, when I mentioned that it's not a great idea to get full coverage, the usual pushback I get is, hey, Johnny, I hear there are lots of car thefts down here. If I don't have full coverage, if I get my car stolen, I won't get reimbursed. And I say, well, just put a kill switch in your car. You know, if you send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, I'll show you how to put a kill switch in for 10 bucks or less, making it absolutely impossible for anyone to steal your car unless they jump in with you, push you out, and drive away. And there's about zero probability that's going to happen. Down here in Latin America, cars are stolen, but almost always, at least 95% of the time anyway, they're stolen out of parking lots or when you've got them parked on the street. Fact is, I practically never have heard of a single case where a car's been stolen when a person's in it or driving it. It's almost always been when it's parked somewhere overnight or in a parking lot during the day. That's why I've always had a kill switch on my vehicle. What's a kill switch? Well, it's a simple toggle switch, a cutoff switch. It gets spliced in between your starter or ignition wire. All you do is flip that hidden switch whenever you park your car, and no one can ever start it. Depending how you set it up, there'll either be no spark at the spark plug or it just won't turn over. Which brings me to this related final email. It comes from Denny. He says, Johnny, up in the States here, if you're worried about getting your car stolen and don't want to pay high-end insurance costs, the best defense, in my opinion, is to continue to drive a standard transmission. Yeah, they're still available up here, but you hardly see them anymore. He says, I'll be willing to bet that 9 out of 10 people in the States looking to take my car for a joyride won't make it out of the driveway because they don't know how to drive a stick shift. Just a thought. Signed, Denny. All right, Denny, great idea for up there, but down here, no dice. Even most women, even young ladies down here know how to drive a stick shift because up till maybe only 5 or 10 years ago, the place was flooded with stick shifts. Mostly, I guess, because back then, stick shifts were cheaper than automatics. They ran $1,000 to $1,500 less when purchased new. The fact is, practically every Latina I've ever dated could drive a stick shift. How about that? Meanwhile, none of my three sisters up in the States could. But oddly enough, my 90-year-old mother can drive a stick like nobody's business. Everyone from her generation could. So, Denny, nice try, but no cigar.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.